When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our extended free preview of our What a Cartoon Movie episode all about Pinocchio. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, currently recording this from inside of a whale, who is here with me today.
Hi, diddly day. This podcaster's life is gay. Hey, it's Henry Gilbert.
Hey, that's very true. And yes, for the month of March, we looked at Pinocchio for about 5 hours. 1940s Ooh. Pinocchio, the classic Disney movie, the second Walt Disney feature, and I believe the oldest subject featured so far on What a Cartoon Movie.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. I don't think we've done, before it was the Donald Duck War cartoon, which was 43.
Right,
this,
right.
This is as early as it gets, and that's what our patrons picked. They didn't want to go with the first one, Snow White and Seven Dwarfs, because I think this is seen as the high watermark of the entire Disney enterprise.
I think we'll get to it in our time here. But
oh, sure.
Yes, for this podcast, I cracked the books. I cracked the book Pinocchio. I read the entire book. So you're going to hear throughout this podcast how different the movie is and how they didn't stick to the source material, but they still made a fine movie. We go over the fascinating creation of the movie, the many different forms it took, and just how expensive it was and just the amount of special effects that you may not realize that are on the screen because they're just so easy to do now.
Mm-hmm. There's so much of the film that I took for granted is like, oh, this is just a hokey old movie. I didn't realize like, oh, this is a joke or this is inventive or this is them showing off, like, this is the same as seeing a brand new special effect in a Marvel movie or them just showing off like, you never seen this in a 3D movie before, like in a Pixar film, but this instead it was, you've never seen light refract over mm-hmm. a cell. Never seen multi-plane camera moves like this. There's so much, especially with Bob's great history of the making of it, like you really come to appreciate what an achievement in animation Pinocchio is. And then on top of that, we have some fun with the story that as it is.
Yes. Yeah. how strange and at times arbitrary it is. But yes, you're going to hear a brief preview, about 45 minutes of our chat about Pinocchio. If you want to hear the whole nearly 5 hour thing, please go on over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Sign up there for $10 a month. You get to hear the rest of this podcast as well as every What a Cartoon Movie episode we've done so far. That is over 3 years of 3 to 5 hour podcasts about so many different movies. As Henry likes to say, from a Goofy movie to Akira.
That's
we,
right.
We cover the gamut. So many different kinds of movies, so many different eras. If you've got a favorite animated movie, we might have covered it, and if not, we'll probably cover it soon.
Mm-hmm. Like, say, next month with Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
But that's right,
yes. A long-awaited one. And, yeah, I mean, if you want to hear a bunch of Disney ones, we've covered so many. Like Bob said, a Goofy movie, Great Mouse Detective, look, there's a lot of them. There's so many.
Aladdin, Lion King,
Hercules, yeah, Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yes,
we've covered so many Disney films.
Of the 90s classics. But yes, that's all at the $10 level at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. When you sign up for that, you also get the $5 stuff that includes so many miniseries, over 100 episodes of the miniseries we've done to date, and monthly access to both Talking Futurama and Talking of the Hill. But that's it for our little intro. Now for a free preview of our chat about our favorite little wooden liar, Pinocchio.
Upon a star, as dreamers do.
For this podcast, I did a ton of research, more than normal, because now that we've adjusted our schedule to do fewer episodes of What a Cartoon, we have more time to spend on individual episodes, and I definitely did that with this episode. I read the entire book, The Adventures of Pinocchio, which is a 200-page book, not a big deal, but there is a new 2021 translation by Penguin Books that I absolutely recommend. It has a ton of footnotes that provide context about things that only make sense in 19th century Italy, like why is Pinocchio doing this? Why is he wearing this? What does this pun mean? So much context is provided both by the footnotes and the introduction. It is a great version of Pinocchio. Whenever you buy an old book that was once published in another language, you're normally getting the 100-plus-year-old translation that is antiquated, might not have, like, you know, the right resources going into it, might be censored for the audience of that time. This is a new translation. Absolutely recommend it, and it was a very fun read.
I like to imagine 1850s Pinocchio heads are complaining about localization errors. Like, they completely erased this section of Pinocchio.
So yeah, I definitely check that out, because I'll be talking a lot about how the book differs from the movie. I don't want to go overboard on that because it differs in a lot of ways. It's very different, but it's fun to see what they took from this story.
You know, I did not read the book. Bob did such a great job on that. I did watch a little synopsis of what, like a 30-minute synopsis of what happens in the book as compared to the film. But yeah, you hear about it with so many others of like, oh, did you know how fucked up it was in the real version? Of like, I definitely heard that a ton about Cinderella and Snow White as a kid.
Yeah.
But rarely about Pinocchio.
We're going to get into how extremely dark and fucked up the original source material is very, very soon. So if you don't want to read 200 pages, you're like, I don't want to read a book. Well, guess what? A friend of the show, Casey Green, the great comic artist, he has adapted all of Pinocchio into comic book form. It's all online. You can read it for free. Just search Casey Green Pinocchio. He has turned every chapter of the book into his own chapter of comic art. It is great. And when you're reading it and you're thinking, this is crazy, well, here's the thing, buddy. It is extremely faithful. The Pinocchio, it's the book, amazing. Is as crazy as Casey Green depicts in his comic. So please read it. It's literal down to like what the characters say to each other directly from the book. It's amazing. Excellent work by Casey Green.
Yeah, he's the man. He's so great. We got to have him back on again. But that's so thank you for directing me to that, Bob. I haven't finished reading it yet, but it is a great, I think from what I've heard about that original book, I think he captures the spirit of it very well.
Absolutely. And I also recommend, it is very like sanitized Disney propaganda, but there's something called The Making of Pinocchio, No Strings Attached. I assume at one point it was like a DVD extra. Someone just put it on YouTube. Again, it's the very Walt Disney was a visionary. He had this great idea. He wanted to bring joy to the world. It's that kind of thing. But they talk to people while they were still alive. There's all this archival stuff. It's worth it just for that. But of course, it's the, you know, sanitized Disney version of things that is always not accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it's the propaganda. We've all seen the same like 18 clips of Walt Disney where, I mean, of course, like the publicity video of him, I just imagine, because they've used it in a million things, of like Walt Disney on film pretending to pitch out the story of Pinocchio in front of all the storyboards. Yes.
He's just, he's got like the little pointer and it clearly just posed for that picture. Yes, he's not actually doing the work. Let's talk about the book first. So yeah, I read the book, totally worth it. Let's talk about where it comes from. So this all starts in 1881 with the serialized publication of L'Aventure de Pinocchio, Storia di un Burattino, Story of a Puppet. My Italian's not very good, folks, so bear with me here.
Hey, what's the matter you, Bob?
And there will be a lot of Mario-style fun in this episode that is not racist. We checked. Yeah. So this was published sort of like manga. It was published in the weekly Italian's children publication, Giornale per I Bambini, which means newspaper for children. So
this was Shonen published. Shonen Jump, basically. Yeah.
Basically, this was like Dragon Ball in 1881, but basically published in chapters on a weekly basis for children in this children's publication.
Wow, that's great, man. The serialization of works back then was very normal. Like Tale of Two Cities was the same deal, right? I believe a lot of Dickens was published that way.
Yeah. It was a very popular way to tell a story and then have it compiled in a book, just like manga, folks. Mm-hmm. So this tale was created by Carlo Collodi, the pen name for writer Carlo Lorenzo. Let's go over his history. By the way,
pen name's just like in manga as well.
Yes, but I mean, calling yourself just by a different last name, not the best pen name.
Yeah, you know, the nom de plumes, these Italians need to step up their game with these nom de plumes.
So Carlo Collodi, very interesting guy, born in 1826. In his younger years, he took a job at a bookshop in Florence. And because of that, he was exposed to all these intellectuals meeting in this bookshop. And he gradually became fiercely political. And the backdrop for Collodi's life is the Italian unification movement. Now, this could be a series of podcasts. I won't give the entire history of Italy on this podcast. But at this point in history, Austrians ruled much of northern Italy during Collodi's lifetime.
Okay.
I didn't know that. No one ever taught me about Italy. I know, you know, pizza pasta, the Pope's there, but nothing about Austria and its rule of northern Italy at this point in time. So Collodi was so dedicated to the unification of Italy that he fought in the First and Second War of Italian Independence. This guy probably murdered Austrians before writing about Pinocchio.
Man. You know, now a lot more of it makes sense, the tone of the book.
Yeah. So between these wars, Collodi formed Il Lampione, which probably means the Lampoon, a satirical and pro-democracy publication that was very acclaimed and widely influential in Italy. So a very political writer. He's even fighting in wars to unify Italy. He is an interesting guy. The Italian unification happens, and Collodi grows very disillusioned by the state of Italy. This didn't help things at all. Like, one thing he was really devoted to was solving the poverty problem in Italy. And a lot of the book of Pinocchio is about, like, Geppetto is so fucking poor. You don't see that in a Disney movie. There's nothing about poverty in the movie. Geppetto is poor. Everyone around him is poor. It's so focused on poverty.
You know, the Disney vision is not about the really making you feel too bad for poor people or like empathy. Empathy towards poor people is not the most famous thing about Disney.
No, absolutely not. So, yeah, this Italian unification project ended with an Italy that was sleazy and corrupt, and politicians did nothing to help the people. So it's sort of like, you know, when the worst president ever is in office and then you get a Democrat in and nothing changes, your life does not get better. We're all feeling disillusioned sometimes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, boy. Yeah, I'm really feeling for this Collodi guy.
I'm a regular Collodi over here. So, yeah, again, the book is really focused. It's a book written by a very disillusioned man who used to believe in the future of this country, but now his generation let him down. So he's like, I will educate the children. I believe in the younger generation. We couldn't solve this problem, but if I impart this wisdom into the youth of Italy, they will help Italy grow and solve the poverty problem, and they will make this country better. That is why in his 50s, he starts writing children's literature.
Wow, he was that old then, man. Boy, unfortunately, knowing the fascist future of those children that he raised on these books, didn't work out so well.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about that with the release of Pinocchio.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
So children's literature is a very new concept when Collodi starts writing it. He was 55 when the story entered serialization, and he was nearly 60 when the complete book was published, and he died 7 years later.
Man, yeah, that's not a bad lifespan for, you know, 150 years ago or abouts. That's not so bad. 67.
And you have to go back to think about just how awful life used to be, even 130 years ago, where children's literature was a new idea because the idea of a childhood was new. You're not immediately thrown into a coal mine or forced into labor. You are allowed to be educated and choose a path if you have enough money. And the idea of formal education was a new idea in Collodi's lifetime. Like, we need to start sending kids to school, which is why so much of Pinocchio is go to school.
It's all about school. Yes. Yeah. Wow. That's why it's a school guilt trip.
Yes.
The entire time.
And the metaphor he uses is like, if you don't go to school, you're a jackass because, you know, you turn into a donkey. And then if you don't go to school in your later years, you'll be doing the work of a jackass. You will be doing hard labor.
That's a perfect. Yeah. It is such a perfect metaphor that not just that you're a jackass and that you are mockable. It is the like, thanks to your ignorance, you can only be like worked to death because that's all you can do. Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
So, yeah, Collodi wanted to teach children this is how you thrive in a world that's incredibly harsh. There's no social safety net. No one is there to help you. There's no social security. A lot of the book later on is like, now you have to take care of your parents. Like, ooh, you must take care of Geppetto now because where's he going to go? There's no state sanctioned like old folks homes. He's not getting like a pension.
You're right, boy. That's harsh, man.
And because it was written at a much darker time, Pinocchio is a much darker book. Yes, darker than 1940. very dark year. Yes. A very dark year. Yeah. And what I love about the book is, like, instead of being the sweetest little good boy who's just so pure and honest, that's how he gets tricked. You know, he didn't mean any harm. Mm. In the book, Pinocchio is a little piece of shit who is always getting into trouble and constantly trying to take the easy path in life and then pretending he's sorry. And only being sorry because he got in trouble.
Right. He's constantly caught and just has to go like, oh, well, sorry. Like, it doesn't seem to give much of a care about other people either, too. Yeah.
He is hilarious in the book. He's like a little Bart Simpson where in the movie he comes to life. He's like, I love you, father. In the book, he comes to life. He steals Geppetto's wig, kicks him in the nose, runs down the street. A cop catches Pinocchio. Geppetto catches up to them. Pinocchio throws such a big tantrum that everyone thinks Pinocchio is being abused by Geppetto, so Geppetto gets arrested.
Oh, man.
Geppetto has to spend a night in jail because Pinocchio made it seem like he was being abused.
Jesus. The first thing he does is put Geppetto in jail by being such an asshole.
And
man.
Pinocchio gets arrested at least twice in the book.
Wow. And he doesn't even care that Geppetto goes to jail, right?
Not really. I guess he just cares that no one is there to like make him food when he gets back to the Geppetto's house. So, yeah, I'm going to limit my my whole book was different kind of thing, although it's hard to ignore seeing how sanitized the Disney version is. But Pinocchio meets an incredibly dark fate in what Collodi intended to be the end of the story. So the Honest John and the Gideon of Collodi's story are just known as Fox and Cat. So at one point in the story, towards the end of what he intended to be the first run of Pinocchio, they know Pinocchio has money and they tell him, hey, Pinocchio, at midnight, we're all going to go out to this field and bury your money. And then it's going to sprout into a tree by the morning. Mm-hmm. So they all stay at an inn together. Pinocchio pays for their entire stay and their meal and everything. The innkeeper wakes him up. The innkeeper's like, oh, Pinocchio, they went out without you. Go after them. Pinocchio goes out after them and at night runs into two assassins, the fox and the cat in disguise. They catch up with Pinocchio in the altercation. Pinocchio bites off one of the cat's paws, but they eventually catch up with him. They try to stab him, but you can't stab a wooden puppet. Your daggers don't work. So what do they do with Pinocchio? They lynch him. The end of Pinocchio, as Collodi intended, was Pinocchio is hung by his neck from a tree until dead. And like all of these fairy tales, it's meant to say, hey, kids, if you don't straighten up, you're going to fucking die.
Man, just the drawing of the Pinocchio puppet hanging from a noose in a tree, choking to death, that's in the original works is insane to look at. Like, it's crazy.
Yes.
This shows you how little care there was for, like, editors or anything of children's works then, because no editor would say, like, well, okay, yeah, just kill him. Just have the kid hang to death. Like, that just shows you, like, where values were at then. But holy shit. I mean, I suppose in a harsh world, you need harsh lessons for kids to be like, hey, you're going to be robbed and murdered if you go walking around town with your little pile of money. Like, you're going to be robbed immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Collodi was like, well, that's the end of Pinocchio's story. No more Pinocchio. So, to let you know how dark this is, I will read you the final lines of text from the first half of Pinocchio, and here it goes. Oh, Dad, if only you were here, Pinocchio says, and then he didn't have the breath to say more. He closed his eyes, opened his mouth, stiffened his legs, gave a big shudder, and remained there as if completely rigid.
Wow.
It's pretty metal.
That's insane. Oh, completely rigid.
Sorry, I just want to play a little riff there to let you know. Good. It's completely metal. Yes. So yeah, the little kid you loved in this book, he's dead.
Yeah. Oh,
dead.
Man. The heartbreaking to me is like, oh, Father, if only you were here. And then he couldn't say anything else because his air was gone. Like,
yes, God, he dies screaming for his father to rescue him as he's hung to death. So that's the end of Pinocchio, everybody. Or is it?
Close the book there. Yes. Right? Yeah, wow.
But yeah, designed to scare the living shit out of children. But, you know, at the request of the editor and due to massive outcry from fans of Pinocchio, Collodi does continue the story and revives Pinocchio for chapters 13 to 36. And then in 1883, all of these chapters are compiled into a single book. And yeah, the back half is still fun to read. A lot of crazy things happen. A lot of really dark things happen. I don't think it's as good because I think Collodi was overcompensating for how dark the first half is.
Sure.
There's a whole lot of fairy tale bullshit in it. And there's a whole lot of lack of continuity in it that some people think is intentional. But I honestly think he didn't care that much. He just wanted to write enough to fill a book.
From a little of what I heard, it actually makes one of my big notes on the movie now feel like, well, they were just adapting it of like the blue fairy just shows up, or the original works equivalent of the blue fairy shows up several times just to be like, I'll fix it, Pinocchio, and just like pulls his ass out of whatever problem he has.
It's kind of like that in the book, but the continuity is very weird in that sometimes the blue fairy's a little girl, sometimes she's an adult. In the book, most people know this, when Jiminy Cricket first shows up, or just the cricket, Pinocchio kills him with a hammer. And then throws a hammer and squishes him because he's being a nag. And then his ghost shows up later in the book to say, to remind him again, here's what you should be doing, Pinocchio, and Pinocchio won't listen. But then, in the back half of the story, he comes back and he's just alive again. Mm. So I don't know if Collodi was looking at his notes or just like, I guess he can come back to life, who cares?
You know, this was before there were forums to complain about things being inaccurate or just like forgetting plot points.
So yeah, that is the dark world of the book Pinocchio. Please read it. Please read Casey Green's comic if you don't want to read actual words, or if you just want a supplement to those actual words, which I had a lot of fun with. I would read the chapter and then read Casey Green's adaptation, and it was a lot of fun.
No, that new translation sounds awesome too. Like, I'm sure there's tons of public domain English translations of Pinocchio as well.
Absolutely,
but,
yeah,
that new one sounds worth it.
It's really good. And so, anecdotal evidence for me, it feels like the book version of Pinocchio is not popular in America. more likely it was popular in America until the movie came around and said, well, no, this is what Pinocchio is, not the weird, dark Italian story.
Just as Disney would do for Mary Poppins and Alice in Wonderland and a million other public domains, or Peter Pan, it becomes the definitive version of it. And kids read the original less, because I certainly had that reaction as a kid. If I saw another Peter Pan story, I didn't view it as the real Peter Pan, because It didn't look like Disney Peter Pan.
When Nickelodeon would do those that Grimm's Fairy Tales anime, which is a great show.
Oh, great. What a cartoon in the future, I'm sure.
It would confuse me, because when they did Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, the dwarves were all named after the days of the week, and I was like, what?
Yeah, man. Or Snow White hanging out with Rose Red. I was like, what the hell is this stuff? Yeah.
So this book is very, very huge on a cultural level. It's actually the third most translated book of all time, behind the Bible and the Little Prince. It goes Bible, Little Prince, Pinocchio. So translated into the third most languages of any written material ever.
Man. I mean, that tells you, an international success, that it's that much, that only the Bible and the Little Prince are above it. That's crazy. Which also, like, that the Little Prince, not too popular in the U.S. either. I mean, I'm sure if you ask some parents, they've maybe heard of it or whatever.
I've seen the anime. It's fine.
Exactly. We have the 80s anime. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And one thing the book reminded me of, like the intro to the new book, is that on our phones, there's an emoji that's the nose growing, and that's just Pinocchio.
Right, so there's
a Pinocchio emoji.
I rate your history of this with zero Pinocchios, Bob, because it's very true.
That too. It became like a liometer. Yes. Although Disney has a lot more to do with the popularization of the nose growing when Pinocchio lies, because in the book, Pinocchio's nose grows for many reasons, but it grows upon two instances in which he lies. But then he lies later and it doesn't grow. And some people think Collodi just, forgot that was a trait of Pinocchio. Some people think he was trying to teach children, well, here are appropriate times you can lie, like if you're going to spare someone's feelings or whatever. So it's not only growing when he lies in the book.
Interesting. I mean, really, they sort of forget that in the movie, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one scene where it feels like it was just showing off animation, not really, like, for plot purposes.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a constant throughout the movie. It's like, it's the nose-growing movie. Nope, just one scene.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, fun effects animation. So it feels like there is a new Pinocchio adaptation every 5 years at least.
Yeah.
But in 2022, the year we're recording this, there will be two. So there's going to be a dark stop motion version that I really want to see from Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, sure.
And there's also going to be a live action remake of the Disney original directed by Robert Zemeckis and starring Tom Hanks as Geppetto.
I don't know. I know it's funny that this crosses over with our next What a Cartoon movie, Roger Rabbit, the Zemeckis directed thing.
Oh, Zemeckis.
But
why
did
you forsake us?
I mean, it's just like, I would assume that Pinocchio will be some sort of effects creature that will be motion captured. As he is, even after everybody rejected it with his full animated films, he still had that in that Welcome to Marwen movie. Like, that still had the digital effects
right
stuff in it. Yeah.
Yeah, I forget. Like, Dumbo did not go direct to Disney Plus, right?
No. It was in theaters, yeah.
Yeah, this one is. Because I feel like Dumbo was a kind of a floppish kind of movie, and I forgot it existed because it was, like, right before the pandemic.
Yeah, I totally forgot about Dumbo till you said that now, yeah. Ugh, man. And that's on top of all the other... Thanks to Pinocchio being public domain, there's been, like, 80 fucking... We had a Pinocchio in, like, 1989 that was, like, The Adventure Continues shitty Pinocchio movie.
Yeah.
Like, that... what crap that was.
And Roberto Benigni did one. He did two.
He's done two, right?
Yeah. He's grown... He grew from a 50-year-old Pinocchio to a 70-year-old Geppetto.
I will never forget. I do believe it was Nathan Rabin's review of the first of those movies where he talks about them licking a lollipop together and it looking like very, very weird and oral sexy. Yes.
The book I just read, the new translation rather, does talk about Benigni in that him going up to the stage to get his Oscar for Life is Beautiful is a reference to Pinocchio, because in the book version of Pinocchio, Pinocchio goes to the puppet show. The puppet show is happening, but then the puppets recognize Pinocchio and they say, "Pinocchio, come up on the stage." And he climbs over all the chairs to get to the stage.
Wow.
And the writers of the new translation posit that Benigni was doing Pinocchio roleplay. Like, this is my moment where I can be Pinocchio.
I totally.
Yeah.
And instead, we just read it as like, oh, this crazy Italian man. What's he doing here?
Exactly.
Like, I totally believe that. That, you know, I don't know if that makes me like that Oscar moment more or less, but it's that's fun context though.
So that is the history of the book and Collodi, who died like shortly afterwards. But it's a fascinating work. And before I did the podcast, I was like, why does anybody care about Pinocchio? I don't get it. Reading the book, I'm like, oh, there's all these cool things that no one ever really adapts. And perhaps Guillermo del Toro will make the accurate version of Pinocchio that I really want to see.
Also del Toro really loves stories about innocence in a dark world that are also like destroyed by it. So I could see him being very into that. Yes.
So we're all here to talk about Disney's Pinocchio. So let's talk about it.
Yay.
Interesting context for Pinocchio. Pinocchio, very Italian story. It's written by an Italian. It takes place in Italy. So what is happening in the late 30s when Walt Disney is considered making this his studio's second animated feature? What is happening in the world?
I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what's happening. Long before this movie comes out, Italy becomes a fascist state in 1922. Ruled over by another little guy that we all love, just like Pinocchio, named Benito Mussolini.
Later, he'll be given strings in death, I think.
Yes, he was truly given strings.
Actually, his death is kind of similar to Pinocchio's.
Could that have been a Pinocchio reference? Maybe. So Benito Mussolini will later declare war on America in 1941. So there's that. And just a few months after Pinocchio's release in 1940, Mussolini announces Italy will join sides with Hitler in World War II. So
it's going to work out pretty good for that guy.
Yeah, but not a good time to be like, let's all talk about Italy and this wonderful story about Italian people in Italy.
What a tough timing for them. And then again, I guess they, like you said, Italy had been a fascist state for a while before they made this decision. Yeah.
The little boys who grew up reading Pinocchio were all becoming fascists.
That's true. Yeah.
They learned nothing. They learned nothing from Collodi.
They learned that they should have been the people killing somebody to steal their stuff, I guess.
Absolutely. They wanted to be the Honest Johns of the world. The look of the film was redefined to not be taking place in Tuscany, but to be taking place in some vague Northern European world. And to do that, they define the look of the film. Two artists, a Swiss artist named Albert Herter and a Swedish artist named Gustav Tengren, they were the ones who defined the look of Pinocchio to not be in Italy, in impoverished Tuscany, but in the just storybook world of Northern Europe.
Yeah, you know, it's funny to me that I bet this will come up in it, but it's funny to me that like the only bad people like Stromboli are so very Italian, like Geppetto. He's not so Italian.
No, like, he's more of an Austrian, and we'll talk about that soon.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because of the actor who voices him.
But the style of their made-up not Italy of the setting is really good, and I think now it doesn't feel so special because like, we keep talking about Disneyland, but when you walk around Fantasyland, it's that style. Like, that's the Disneyfication is defined by that kind of like just vague melange of like, well, this is, you know, a while ago and kind of European, you know. Yeah.
So we talked about where Benito Mussolini was in 1940. Let's talk about a similar fascist, Walt Disney. Where was he? 1937 gave us Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. That's going to be a future episode of this podcast. The short story behind that is the very short story. It was called like Disney's Folly. Oh, what a rube. What a real jackass. Yeah. What a maroon this guy making a feature animated movie. It was an incredible hit. It really paid off. Everyone thought it would destroy him, but he proved them wrong.
Yeah, that and you know what? There's a lot of problems with the man Walt Disney, but boy, his spite-based approach to creativity, I can't not agree with, man. Everybody doubted him.
Unlike him, we're pro-union, but we also are fueled by spite.
Yeah, exactly. He got his fucking cartoon stolen from him with Oswald. He made a more popular thing, and then everybody thinks, oh, well, you do fine with your Donald Ducks and your Mickey Mouses, but you're going to waste a whole bunch of money. Nobody will watch a cartoon for a feature-length time. No way.
Yes, an incredible hit for him. He's riding high on the success, and they're trying to figure out what they want to do as their next big animated feature. Now that they're the feature company, they're also making shorts, but still, they're going to make more of these animated features.
I mean, it's just amazing to think of, like, there had just not been an animated feature before. It just didn't exist. There were no rules for it. There weren't like, well, pacing is defined by this, or this is how long you have in it. Yeah.
That's Disney propaganda, Henry. There were animated features before Snow White.
All right. Well,
they want you to think it was the first one.
Well, were they done in America? Because
no.
Okay, well, then I don't care.
That's why they don't count. But yeah, so they're very successful because of Snow White. And here's what happens. Here's how they find Pinocchio. Tokyo. So animator Norman Ferguson, he worked on some of the Mickey shorts all the way back to the 20s. He brought in a translated copy of The Adventures of Pinocchio, gave it to Walt, like, hey, let's do something with this idea. Walt Disney loves the idea of Pinocchio. That could be their next future.
I guess this is before his children are born, when he could have the lie of like, and I read this book to my child all the time, and so we had to make Mary Poppins.
You know, given when Walt Disney grew up, this seems like it was a new idea to him, but he could have been read this as a child, because buying Pinocchio for a kid when Walt Disney was a kid is like buying Harry Potter for a kid now.
That's true.
That's how old it was.
Yeah, I wonder. You know, though, based on a lot of the details I've heard about his childhood, he also seemed like he was your childhood is for working, boy.
Yeah,
that was his childhood.
Shuck some corn, Walt. So, Italian-born Disney story artist Bianca Maggioli. By the way, her name was changed from Maggioli.
Maggioli. Wow.
For reasons.
An Italian woman.
Yes.
Wow.
One of the very, very few women in the story department.
Yeah. I thought you send the ladies to ink and paint because that's all their brains can handle.
A few snuck through, like Mary Blair.
That's good. Yeah. No.
So, Bianca assigned to create an outline based on the book. She does this. Disney thinks it sticks too close to the source material. Clearly, he wanted to make a much more marketable movie than the dark little bastard Pinocchio is in Collodi's storybook.
I mean, I can totally understand that. Like, Walt is a very commercially minded man, especially after just making all of that money off of adapting Snow White into, like, well, it's the funny dwarves movie. That's really what the people are coming for.
And speaking of money, they basically kind of had unlimited money to make this movie because of Snow White. It's just like, that's why they kind of movies can't look any better than this on a technical level in terms of just the sheer manpower that goes into this and the technology of the time.
Yeah, this is before the war, so right before America being in the war, I should say. It's not before the war, but so he's got all that money. And yeah, the profits of Snow White, since it was Disney's folly, like, that meant he didn't have to share a lot of profits with people, because he put up a lot of the money himself.
So Bambi was going to be the second Disney feature. It was undergoing a lot of production difficulties. They're having trouble, like, nailing the look of the world. They're having trouble animating deer in a realistic way. And they are very skeptical about the source material because it was a grim and sober book written for adults. And they were like, how do we turn this into a family movie? They couldn't really crack the nut on Bambi. So they move on to Pinocchio. And I believe Fantasia and Pinocchio are being worked on at the same time. I think it's like pre-production on Fantasia is happening during Pinocchio.
Right. Yeah, that would make sense with when they were both released. Yeah.
And Bambi would end up being the fifth Disney feature released in 1942 after Fantasia and Dumbo.
And it's also really great. It's really great. Yeah. But and also about a boy learning a lesson. Mm-hmm. So similar thing.
Much, much shorter than this movie, though.
Yes. Yeah.
We're talking about Dumbo, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one big nut to crack for Disney was the design of Pinocchio. Some of the artists were a little fixated on the idea of making him like very puppet like. But Disney didn't like that approach because he's like, well, there's nothing charming or cuddly about like a literal wooden puppet moving around. And the most we get of that is in the beginning when he literally is a puppet.
Right.
Like he is the most puppet like when he is being moved around by Geppetto. But they eventually make him into more of a childlike character, basically a child's body with just joints drawn on, which makes the transformation into a real boy a little bit of an anticlimax. It's like, well, they erased your joints and you've got a real nose, but you're kind of the guy I was staring at the whole time.
Yeah, it's not, I suppose he has like more defined fingers now. He's not wearing the gloves anymore, you know, but yeah, it's, I really like when he does move in puppety ways. Like those are the fun animation moments of like, oh, well, yeah, he doesn't have a neck attached to his head in the way we do, so he can just spin around his body while his head stays forward, or his knees can spin in the opposite direction or whatever. There's so much fun just animation concepts alone with him in this.
And to the artist, Frank and Ollie, we're going to talk about the Nine Old Men. We know about the Nine Old Men, but they were the two that really wanted to make him look like an actual puppet, more like the 19th century Italian puppet that he is in Collodi's book, where he's got like a conical hat and he is very much functioning like a puppet did at the time. Their big change was to make him more modernized and appealing. the biggest celebrity at the time on the radio, one of the biggest ones, was a fucking puppet. It was Charlie McCarthy.
Oh, right, right, right.
Yes,
yeah.
The ventriloquist puppet who will later like narrate a Disney movie, like
that's
a Disney
right.
short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Candace Bergen's brother.
Father.
Well, she said she's called Charlie McCarthy her brother.
Edgar Bergen is a ventriloquist.
Yes.
But yeah, his radio show drew in over a third of all radio listeners at the time. So they're like, people love the way modern puppets look. Pinocchio must be a more modern puppet. He cannot look like a 19th century Italian puppet.
I mean, look, when Roberto Benigni, one of the big negatives on his movie was he stuck more to that classic design, especially with the pointed hat on. And it does look creepy. It doesn't look fanciful. It looks creepy now. You do kind of need to adapt for the times of what people think puppets are, unless you want to look creepy, which I perhaps Guillermo del Toro's version will lean into that.
It better look creepy.
Yeah.
So the animator and artist Milt Kahl was the guy who spearheaded the idea of Pinocchio looking more like a real little boy with just some puppety, you know, parts and joints and stuff. His conical hat from the Italian version was changed into a Tyrolean hat. That's the kind of hat he's wearing, which makes you think more of the Swiss Alps or Northern Europe, but not about that stinky old Italy with that awful Mussolini man.
Of course, man. I mean, it is a better, to me, aesthetically, I think it is a better hat than the pointed hat, but it's funny, yes, like you said, it brings the neutral Swiss instead of the fascistic Italian. And
Pinocchio's like wearing lederhosen or something, I don't know, but they essentially, they also give him Mickey Mouse's hands and gloves at the same time, too.
You know, that's right, yeah. You're right. He's wearing like German lederhosen, and his jacket feels more German style too. Yeah, he's a weird mix of things. Actually, when I see his lederhosen, I also think like, oh, is that why like Mario wears the plumber outfit? Like that it's meant to, his overalls are meant to sort of evoke
Well, Toad is a Pinocchio reference in Japanese.
Kinopio, yeah, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, so to make him more marketable, they make him look like Charlie McCarthy, they give him Mickey Mouse's hands and gloves and send him out the door. And this pure and innocent design will change his characterization in the movie. Like, it would be much different. He would be a much different personality if he was this crude Italian puppet, but now he's like a sweet, pure Northern European boy. He's on the good side of the war. Or neutral.
Yeah. Hey, you know, some Americans agree with the fascists, so, but I don't want to piss them off. Just be neutral. No, I get why they did it for America, like that, you know, especially for Disney's vision of kids. If he was just like a little shit all the time, you wouldn't be rooting for him the same. Like, you want him to, because you want to imagine him like you would imagine your own son or yourself when you were a kid, of just like, oh, well, I know he means well. He just gets tricked by other people.
We know children don't, actually. They're selfish, and we need to teach them how to not be selfish.
You know, in another Italian-American fable, Sopranos, that's what constantly happens with the character of AJ, the son in the show.
Is he a regular Pinocchio?
He is a little shit. Okay. He's given everything, and then when he messes up through his own fault and his own actions, all his parents do is just say, like, he means well. He gets distracted by the wrong people. Like, it's just the lie you tell yourself about your shitty kids or your shitty self when you were a kid.
Well, like, Walt Disney himself admitted that it was going to be an issue adapting this book because no one actually likes the main character. You're reading Pinocchio like you're watching a reality TV show. Like, you hate the person and you can't stop watching because they just keep digging themselves deeper and making a bigger and bigger ass out of themselves.
That's great. Yeah.
So the solution to this was to make Pinocchio, you know, a good little boy. But then the entire movie is just about a naive little boy being tricked. So that's not like a proactive character. It's about a character who gets taken advantage of over and over.
True.
The solution is a point of view character, and that's where Jiminy Cricket comes in.
Perfect. So, perfect.
Yeah. They make a likable character, but he's not a fun character to follow. So Jiminy Cricket is the point of view character. He's the more American character in this European world.
Yeah, he really is just a regular American 40-year-old showing up to be like, hey, buddy, how's it going?
And he's worldly, too, more than Pinocchio. And like I said, Pinocchio kills him in the book, does not commit any acts of violence against Jiminy in the movie.
I really love the style of Jiminy in this, that he's such like a workaday guy who's like, my dogs are killing me.
He's like a little hobo in the beginning, and then he's got like a top hat and coattails and everything. Once
he's
gets transformed,
he's working his way up. He's like, not too shabby. I like it. Yeah, there's a lot of spirit of vaudeville in him.
Absolutely,
in
and that goes down to his voice actor. We'll talk about him soon.
Okay.
So, yes, this cricket guy is going to be our guide through the movie. he's around before Pinocchio comes to life. He's our point of view character. And they want to design this character to make him, you know, interesting, marketable, cuddly. They start by like a realistic bug design. They start by making that. They're like, we don't want to look at a bug. So eventually artist Ward Kimball kind of sands away all the bug-like qualities and makes him like a little green man. And you believe he's a cricket because the movie tells you he is. There's nothing bug-like about this little green man, which I think as a kid I was like, is he's a bug? I don't get it.
Yeah.
But no, he's a cricket just because he says, I'm Jiminy Cricket. And that's it.
I guess by his size, he is cricket-like. And I guess he hops from things in action and size, but in all other ways, he's like, he's a man with a green face. That's what Jiminy Cricket is.
And what I like most about Jiminy Cricket is that his name is a fun euphemism for saying Jesus Christ.
Yes, yeah.
Which Jiminy Cricket is said in Snow White as an exclamation.
Right. Oh, that's so great. Yeah, because it's JC. It stands for the same thing. But Jiminy Cricket. Yeah, and then
it's like saying HE double hockey sticks. It's just like a euphemistic way to say a swear or like a curse.
But it's funny, for the last 80 plus years, kids hear that and they think it just actually means Jiminy Cricket, the character that we all know and love, not your, you know, father not trying to blaspheme as he stubs his toe or whatever.
So Disney and his team were trying to advance the animation medium, of course, and we can see this in all the effects-based characters.
Oh my God,
like
yeah.
The blue fairy, the mocap fairy, as I call her, the rotoscope fairy, and Monstro the whale. There were, I think, like 52 special effects people just devoted to that angle of the movie.
It's amazing. When you look at it from a special effects standpoint, like the multiplane shots they do in this, and also like Figaro, too, is just such like a realistic cat moving around and doing all this stuff. Like, that's them showing off the craft as well. Like, yeah, it's, you know, we think about it as just like a modern thing of like, say, Jar Jar Binks. Like, Jar Jar Binks is in Phantom Menace because you're supposed to be impressed of like, look at this. You've never seen an all digital character in a live action movie before. Isn't that impressive? That's what Monstro is in the same kind of way.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not thinking with the 1940 mindset, some of this might not be impressive to you. But if you think, well, they don't have computers, this is all people figuring it out and filming it, it's super impressive. And the multiplane camera was something that they were really working on perfecting for this movie. And I can talk a little bit about that. So the multiplane camera, it's basically an orchestration of several layers of art to simulate a camera dollying forward in a scene, and several layers are being peeled back. It's sort of like our Super Nintendos did this in 1991. But
it's mode 7.
Yeah, yeah. In 1940, they had to figure out, like, well, how do we not just push in on a static piece of art? How do we have several layers, like, moving at different times and different speeds to simulate the actual human eye or a camera in a 3D environment?
It's amazing when you see, as a kid watching that Disney propaganda, when you finally see, I more associate it with the official behind the scenes stuff they made for Bambi, where they have like, here's the giant, like the 20 foot tall multi-plane, like, and by sets of glass just on top of each other. Okay, we move this a little there, and just when I see that contraption built just to do what looks like, oh well, yeah, it's a camera moving across the scene, it just looks normal, like, yeah, that, to know that that's why they did it, like, amazing.
And
amazing.
I'll definitely point out all the points in the movie when it is used, because to me it's strikingly obvious, but to some people it might not be. So yeah, this thing was invented by Bill Garrity. Disney did not invent the multiplane camera. Other people were using different versions of it, but Bill Garrity was a technician that brought it to a new level. This one was over 12 feet tall and had up to 9 levels of celluloid at once.
Wow, 9, man.
And here's how involved the process was. So the 16-second scene, which pushes in on the Red Lobster Inn, that took a crew of 5 men 46 consecutive hours to shoot. And yes, they were working in shifts, but it took 46 hours to shoot a 16-second scene of a camera pushing in on an inn and all the layers moving at the right way to fool your eye into thinking this is a 3D thing I'm looking at.
That's incredible. Man, that is amazing.
And Disney would use this technique up until their last cell animated movie, The Little Mermaid. But they didn't have the capacity to actually shoot multi-plane camera stuff at the time of The Little Mermaid, so they had to outsource the multi-plane shots.
Oh, that's sad.
Yes.
That's sad, man. The later post Little Mermaid ones, I just think of how when we did Hunchback,
it does
a city zoom in. All of those feel like references to Pinocchio, of just like, well, this is how you set up your movie. You have to do a multi-plane style zoom in of a city in your Disney cartoon.
And that was complicated, but they had computers.
Yes, yes.
They had computers to make it much easier. And yes.
They also didn't have to wait for film to develop either.
Exactly, exactly, that too. And, you know, war was not breaking out in 1996.
Also that, either. Yeah.
So, in this movie, when you watch it, it's pretty obvious, but it relies heavily on rotoscoping, especially with characters like the Blue Fairy. But according to some sources I read, it seems like a lot of this movie was filmed in live action first to use as reference. In a lot of cases, like the Blue Fairy, it's like, well, yeah, we're just literally drawing over this actor and her performance. But some things you might not realize, like they made real versions of all the clocks that functioned in the movie.
Wow, I didn't know that. Wow.
So like a lot of things you would not expect to be a live action reference are a heavily referenced in the actual finished movie.
Now people call that cheating, or they act like it's evil to do. Like I remember when Yuri on Ice, the series I really loved, people made fun of it for like, oh, I can tell how rotoscoped this is. They just drew over pictures. It's like there's more to it than that, than drawing over pictures, and usually.
There are ways to do it poorly, like Ralph Bakshi.
Certainly, yes. Oh, he does it. Yeah. Yeah, as we saw, listen to our Cool World 1, folks. Go back in the archives.
Fate steps in and sees you through one wish upon a star. You're